My name is Andrew Powell, and you're listening to The Gate. During the 2007 Toronto International Film Festival, I had the chance to attend an interesting press conference for a movie called Lars and the Real Girl. It's one of those films that when you describe it, it starts sounding a little bit like National Lampoon's Vacation, as some of the cast actually points out. But the truth is that in the end, with the amazing cast, you end up with a film that's actually quite a bit more of a dramatic comedy than you might expect. In the film, Lars orders a sex doll one day, and in his delusional state, he actually sees the sex doll as a person. And the film is the relationship that he builds with that sex doll. But the honest truth is that there's way more to it than that. And the really odd part is that, generally speaking, this could very well be a family drama. There's really nothing in the film except for the description of the doll that would make you think that, you know, this is some sort of improper kind of drama. There's really a heart to it that you don't see in many films. And it's interesting to see and hear the cast talk about this during this press conference. You're going to hear from Craig Gillespie, who is the director, Nancy Oliver, who is the writer, and Ryan Gosling is a star who plays Lars. As well, there's Emily Mortimer and Paul Schneider, who play a husband and wife. Kelly Garner, who plays Margot. And the amazing Patricia Clarkson, who actually plays Lars' psychiatrist. Here's what they had to say about the film. And you'll definitely want to stay tuned till the very end. There's a little revelation at the end that I think adds a little something to the entire story. First up, here's Elvis Mitchell, the host of the event, talking with Craig about how he came to be involved in this project.
How does a movie like this come to a first-time director?
Actually, John Cameron, who's sitting down, the producer.
Producer
on
John
the film.
Cameron's in the front row.
Yes, it's funny. We're actually, I'll try and keep it brief, but our
wives, 45 minutes.
Our wives are friends and been friends for like the last 5 years, and professionally, we hadn't done anything together, and he called me up one day and said, I've got this movie about a guy that falls in love with a sex doll. And I was on the set of something else, and I almost said, don't bother. But being a friend, I said, you know, all right, send it over. And he did, and I didn't get around to it for a few weeks. And then my wife picked it up, who's a much tougher critic than I am. And she said, have you read this? And I said, no, I haven't picked it up yet. She's like, it's really good. And I was like, really? Okay. So I picked it up, and I read it. And it really hasn't changed since that first draft that Nancy wrote. And then we met Nancy and talked about it and gave her my take on it, and we kind of all agreed to try and do it together.
Now, Nancy, where does something like this come from?
A dark and mysterious place. I had a weird job where I came into contact with a lot of perverse websites and lonely guys, and the seed was planted, and I kind of took it from there.
Wait, what was the job?
That's a deep, dark secret.
Well, there's only a few of us in the room, so I swear we're not.
Yeah, and I trust you all, but no.
No. Well, I'll move on to you then, Ryan. I mean, not about the website or anything like that.
Anything.
God, look at you, yes. As a Canadian, you would understand perversity deeply.
You guys going to take that? I don't
know. No, it won't be your
really?
Fault yet.
Oh. So pass it.
Now, did somebody tell you about this, or how did the script get to you?
I heard the concept of it, you know, and obviously I was intrigued, but I could never have been prepared for what I was going to read, you know. So it's such a, I think everybody has the same, I've never been warned so much not to ruin a movie in my life, you know. Everybody who read the script is their favorite script. And I read it and it was one of mine, you know. I just thought it was such a, you know, conceptually it's funny. It's a kind of a funny idea, but it's quite emotional. And I thought it was really beautiful. The idea that you could love something that didn't have to love you back. That love isn't a transaction. That it's something that you can just give freely of your own will and that it's real. It's real even if it's not reciprocal, you know. So I thought it was really kind of a powerful idea.
How do you cast Bianca? I mean, I know you cast people. How do you cast an object?
It was actually up to me. there's an endless array of choices, and I actually, it's a factory. It's an actual sex doll you can buy in San Diego. There's a place that makes these things, and there's also a documentary that just came out on BBC last month, I think, with guys that have these relationships, and it's quite sad and tragic, and it's much more emotional than physical for, you know, these guys in these relationships. But I saw some photographs, and this one doll actually had a soul to it. It's like, and she has freckles, and she's not like the most attractive or stereotype of a doll. And I wanted to go with something that you could grow to empathize with. And we actually changed Bianca through the film. She starts out with a lot of makeup, and we strip that away and let the freckles start to show, and work with it very subtly so that, you know, she can grow on you with Ryan and Lars's character.
And how do you relate to something like, I mean, because you're playing scenes with something unreal.
Yeah, but I don't listen to other actors anyway. I act in a vacuum. it was easy. You know, it was interesting for me. I had a really special experience on this film. I think it's really, I'm just really proud of it and more anxious to see what people think of it than any movie I've done, because it's so special and there's nothing really that I could compare it to. But my experience was unique as well. And in working with Bianca, you know, I went through a lot of, I thought I was going to have to play two characters and that, you know, have to play her part as well, and having these dialogues in my head with her and all of these things. But it's going to sound funny to say it, but that you know, she had a really calming presence. And I felt.
What do you mean, calming presence?
She had a real presence.
Okay.
And you could tell when she was on set, you could feel. You could feel that she was there. There was kind of a reverence for what Nancy had written, and everybody was trying to honor that. And I had a pretty interesting relationship with her, because in those scenes, you know, I felt completely alone and I isolated with her. Because this movie depends on our relationship. And as soon as they said action, it was just her and I. And I actually formed a bond with her that would be kind of hard to explain. But that there was something very comforting about her eventually, and about doing scenes with her. And I began to really look forward to our scenes together. And I felt very connected to her. And I didn't have to strive for a relationship as much as I thought I would have to. I really grew to... close to her in some way.
Was it the same for you, Emily? Did you feel that same kind of connection? Mm-hmm.
I felt shy of her. It's so weird. I felt like I couldn't quite meet her in the eye.
Look her in the eye.
No, I was kind of. But she was really very real in that way. Like, she was definitely something there, and you felt you were very aware of her, and she gave a kind of, I don't know, like sort of. Dignity to, she was very dignified, and I can't explain it, but I was shy of her, and I was shy of their relationship. Like, I felt like, I don't know, I was
like, you intruding on the relationship?
Yeah, kind of, tiny bit. Like, there was, like, you couldn't kind of, you didn't want to interfere too much or something. And I sort of, I felt bad afterwards. I felt like I was kind of fake with her. Like, I was pretending. You know, because I didn't quite know how to deal with her, and I felt like I was being a bit false. But no, that she was a real presence, and she had a great, and there, it's such an amazing and lovely paradox that this strange creature, this sex doll, which kind of is potentially so sort of upsetting in a way, and you know, to do with the kind of dark side of life, or with the confusing, weird, messy part of life, brought such grace somehow to in the film, and you know, and to the atmosphere on the set. There was something very graceful and dignified about her and having her there that was kind of intimidating.
What was your relationship towards it, Paul?
Well, you have to understand, like, this, the doll, Bianca, is extremely lifelike. You know what I mean? Like, it's like a state-of-the-art
piece of work, you know? I mean, like, it's like a Ron Mueck sculpture, you know what I mean? It's like dead seriously super realistic.
So you really do feel it in the room because in that way you feel one of those sculptures. I mean...
Have you seen his stuff? Okay, yeah. It's really a strange experience.
You actually feel that stuff before you go into the room, that presence.
Absolutely. And also, you know, what Craig had done on set is he had people handling Bianca in a wheelchair, and as much as Ryan wanted to sort of be her chaperone for when he moved from like one room to the next to be shooting and all that, it was like, I guess the way that we make ourselves comfortable with a subject like this is to be sort of bawdy and vulgar and laugh about it. But honestly, like you have to understand, like on set, it's like sort of being around a mirror all the time. And if you're in front of a mirror, you kind of like sort of stand a little taller and sort of... Because she's just silent. I mean, she's inanimate, you know. She's just going to be there quiet. So, you know, for my character, she was kind of like reflecting my faults more harshly back at me. And so because I had a different relationship to Bianca than obviously Ryan or Emily. I stayed quite a bit away from Bianca. I didn't want to see how real she was. I didn't want to touch her or, you know, because she's actually a sort of a state-of-the-art piece of really fantastic sort of, you know, engineering to make this thing. But I really wanted to stay away from it so that when Craig rolled camera on Emily and I's reaction to the actual doll, when my little brother has brought this thing in thinking that it's a missionary, I wanted there to be some semblance of truth in that reaction. And I feel like the specific tone of the script that was so important for all of us to try to maintain was brought by the fact that, you know, we have this, you know, this, the you know, almost like, she's almost like bait for an audience, you know. You come and see that, but then hopefully our reactions to it are as honest as possible. And then you have some kind of interesting interplay there between something that could be taken into National Lampoon's land, but instead I feel like my job was to sort of try to act as honestly towards this thing as I could. And, you know, Emily is exactly right, that she did have a presence. I mean, I never had scenes with her alone. And I can't imagine what Ryan was doing in the preparing for scenes like that. But, you know, for me, it was everyone needed to calibrate their distance from Bianca to find out like how truthful they need to be and to find that relationship within themselves.
What was it like for you, Kelly?
I was really jealous of the doll. because my character, I truly fell in love with Lars. So it was really hard. I mean, it was also interesting because Craig, as a director, gave me the option as an actor if I wanted to make this doll real in my head or not. And I guess I was having trouble trying to come up with an answer for that, and then I realized, well, that's my answer. It was a struggle for my character because I wanted to make it real for the sake of Lars, because at least in my head, my character understood him and felt a lot for him. So I wanted that choice. But at the same time, as a normal 23-year-old woman, girl, she's fake, you know. There's no life there. She's non-existent. I mean, she's a thing, and she's definitely special for him. So I was really jealous of her, but that's fine. She's really beautiful too.
Patty.
God, you guys had very complicated relationships. are we partying later?
Yes, please.
Okay. Elvis, honestly, I think maybe because of my character, I had kind of an objectivity, but I kind of sat back and watched everybody what was, it's so funny, I think the energy off camera, you know, translates on, and everyone's relationship off camera with the doll was very existent on camera. So it was kind of great for the movie and a great energy on set because everyone had this amazing relationship, whatever, however they wanted to define it, with Bianca. And it kind of, it was there at all times, when the camera was rolling, when the camera wasn't rolling, maybe late at night when no one was looking. I don't know. You know what I mean? It was, no. But I mean, it was just, so it was interesting. And I kind of just observed it, and I found it actually very helpful and quite charming to see everyone's relationship to it. So
the whole discussion has me an image of you taking turns going running lines with Bianca. Like, okay, it's my turn. You should come to my trailer. Alan Silverman from Hollywood Bites and News Talk Radio. The question I have is for the cast members to get your sense of why the characters were so willing, the characters in the town were so willing to go along with this, because I think that keeps it from teetering over the edge of the ill factor when you realize that everyone cares so much for Lars that they're willing to do this, we're willing to put up with this ruse. And I'm wondering what each of your sense is of why that is, what the relationship is that they're willing to go that way.
I think that that's a good question. I think it speaks to Nancy's credit, yeah, and to the uniqueness of the film, because I think what really makes this film so special is that it really believes in people. And I don't think it's necessarily that they want to help. Maybe they want to help Lars or they don't, but I think that it recognizes people's need to be a part of something that's special and to have stories to tell and to be connected to something and to have something unusual happen to them in their lives, you know. And I think that the most, you know, like I think of a film like Edward Scissorhands, which I love, it's an amazing film, but that in a way it's kind of pessimistic view of people, and that they can't really be around with anything special. They have to kind of have their way with it, and then ultimately they'll taint something that's pure, which is true as well. You know, I think that that's not one ultimate truth. That's a side of it. But I think that Nancy kind of, and I don't mean to speak for you, but one of the things that I thought was so special about it was that it really believed in people, and it believed that people wanted to be are inherently good.
I think that's true, and that's what, as you said, is so one of the things that's so surprising and cool about the movie is that it you think when this sex doll is introduced that it's going to be a question of this poor guy having to deal with the sort of judging society, and in fact it isn't that at all, and there's something really subversive about that, actually, that it then becomes about everybody's, and I think Paul really hits on it, that there's something about this doll that makes you look at yourself. You know, your initial reaction is sort of fear and confusion, and then you can't help but, there's something about the impassivity of that person that makes you kind of go into yourself and question everything. And I think that happens to all the characters, including the community, you know, that we all somehow, that all the issues and problems in our own lives are brought to the surface by the introduction of this person. And it's about everybody coming to terms with that rather than an outsider dealing with a sort of judging society.
And it's on, just real quickly, on set it mirrored what was happening in the film. You could see that people over the course of shooting started to develop relationships with her too. You know, the focus puller would take her focus, and if he was too close to her eye, he'd apologize. You know, they didn't even realize that he was doing it. You know, the handlers would give her magazines in between shots, and everybody slowly started to love her. I mean, it happened. You know, I know we're being really like reverential right now as we talk about it. It's probably kind of funny from the outside, but you know, I guarantee you, if you spent 10 minutes in a room with Bianca, you'd love it too.
when she would, you know, and you know, she was never like naked. I mean, like whenever they would change her, she would never just be changed on set in front of everybody. It was always modesty. There was modesty. for her. And
when did you decide to do that, to make her like this actual presence instead of treating her like just the doll?
For this reason, you know, it's like I thought if we, because that's the center of the film, and if we don't approach her with the respect of an actress in it, that you would have in a film, it's just not going to work, because everybody has to have that gravity to it, you know. And just to add to the town for a second, it's like there's a lot of emphasis being placed on Bianca, but I think it's La's belief in Bianca. She's really what is the conduit that makes everybody be able to connect. Without her, there's all these people in their own worlds, but she's sort of that catalyst that starts to make people want to be able to reach out and talk to each other.
Okay. In a way, the film kind of reminded me a little bit of The Velveteen Rabbit. I don't know if that had anything to do with you, Nancy, but I thought, you know, like a child's love for his toy is extremely real. You know, he loves it.
What's that focus, that concentration you put on Dennis real to you, or even like Calvin and Hobbes, where Hobbes is real to him and nobody else?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. He really does love it. And that, like, I had a friend one time when they were kids, they lost their teddy bear. And everybody in the family and in school and everyone knew how much he loved it because he had it with him all the time. And when he lost it, they put out like missing ads in the newspaper, and the whole town kind of pulled together to try and find this toy for him, you know. And you know, I just think it speaks to there was an innocence about the film that I think that people in the town got behind, and then ultimately we as cast members and filmmakers got behind, you know.
From the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, given the affection that you just voiced, what became of Bianca after you finished?
Melted down, turned into Eric.
She's rendered.
There's actually more than one Bianca. I have one, and Ryan has one.
We do? Wow, really?
Where do you keep it?
Well, it's not important, really. There, you know, it's wherever she wants to be at that time, I think.
But she has a presence.
I have no doubt that she does. Get the microphone over here. Right here, right behind you.
I heard yours is dating Colin Farrell. Is that true?
It's not dating so much.
Oh, they were out. I saw them, yeah.